Good evening and welcome to the 33rd Legislative District Telephone Town Hall. My name is Lilia and I'll be moderating tonight's call. Thank you for taking the time to join us. We hope you'll find this call informative. In a moment, I'll turn the phone over to State Representatives Tina Orwell and Mia Gregerson and Senator Karen Kaiser for some opening remarks. But first, I want to explain the format for tonight's call. If you would like to ask a question, just press star 3 on your phone and you'll be connected with a staff person who'll take your question and get you into the queue to speak directly with the lawmakers. Please note this is a live question and answer session. By pressing star 3 on your phone, you'll have an opportunity to speak directly with your legislators. We'd like to get through as many of your questions as possible during this call, so we have to limit participants to only one question each. Pressing star 3 right now is all you need to do to ask your question. Here's some information on your legislators. Senator Karen Kaiser was appointed to the Senate in 2001 after serving 5 years in the House. Karen is a champion for increasing health care access and improving outcomes for all Washingtonians, and has worked to contain health costs and reduce health care fraud. A former journalist, Karen holds a bachelor's in political science and a master's in journalism from the University of California. Karen also serves on the board of directors of the Economic Opportunity Institute, is a former Fleming and Fannie Mae Foundation Fellow, and a 2007 Arthur S. Fleming Award recipient. She enjoys singing and traveling. Remember, press star 3 on your phone right now to ask a question. Representative Tina Orwell is the Deputy Speaker pro tempore in the House of Representatives. Before becoming a lawmaker, Tina worked in the Office of Housing for the City of Seattle as a strategic policy planner with emphasis on human services, housing, and economic development. Tina has received numerous awards over the last decade for her work with veterans and in housing and human services. The Foreclosure Fairness Act, anti-human trafficking laws, suicide prevention, and measures to boost STEM education are among her legislative accomplishments. She earned both a bachelor's in psychology and a master's in administration from the University of Washington. Tina has 2 children. Remember, press star 3 right now on your phone to ask a question. Before her appointment to the House of Representatives in 2013, Representative Mia Gregerson served as a council member and deputy mayor for the city of SeaTac. While on the council, she served on the PSRC Executive Board, Board of Directors for Sound Cities Association, and other regional committees. Mia has been a surgical assistant and business manager in the dental field for over 16 years. She has degrees from Highland Community College and the University of Washington. Mia is one of 4 generations in the South King County area. Her daughter, Alexis, currently attends the University of Washington. And that's it. Press star 3 on your phone right now to ask a question. And here they are now, your representatives, Tina Orwell and Mia Gregerson, and Senator Karen Kaiser with opening remarks.
Thank you, Lilia, and thank you all for joining us tonight. As she said, I'm Senator Kaiser, and I'm really pleased you're able to join us because it is good timing. We just wrapped up the 2014 legislative session last Thursday at a little before midnight. Tina had to preside over that event, and so that's staying up late to get the work done. We did come out with an operating budget, and we did not come out, however, with either a transportation package or a capital budget. So I call this a session of missed opportunities because we could have created more than 50,000 jobs for Washingtonians if we'd passed the capital budget and the transportation package, but we did not. And I have to say that my colleagues across the aisle in the Senate who took control 2 years ago, the Republican caucus, they call themselves the Majority Coalition Caucus, and I'm going to call them the job-killing caucus because that's what they ended up doing this year, I'm sorry to say. We did get a few things done, and I'd be happy to discuss what we did get done, but at the moment, I'm still licking a little bit of a wound from not being able to achieve our goals for a capital budget and a transportation package.
And this is Tina Orwell. Thank you for the honor of allowing me to represent you in Olympia, and thank you for joining us tonight. It was a short session. It was a 60-day session. I think some of the highlights of the session include investments we make to really help some of the most vulnerable in our state. We did some new mental health investments and for people with developmental disabilities. I did get some legislation through. We're continuing to work on suicide prevention. Unfortunately, our state has a 15% higher rate of suicide than the national average, youth, seniors, and older adults being higher risk groups. So we did some additional work around training for our medical providers and to make sure we do a consult line. I also have been working on legislation around stopping human trafficking, which unfortunately is very high in our community. But those are 2 of the 4 bills that I worked on And again, thank you for joining us.
And I am so honored to be sitting here next to Representative Orwal and Senator Kaiser tonight. It's been a pleasure to work with them through this short but very fast-paced session. I've learned a lot. I have been sitting on three committees that have done a lot of work. That would be local government, that would be community housing, tribal affairs, and higher ed. I feel very fortunate to be representing the education sector with Representative Orwal here on the House side, and I think in the interim you'll see us doing a lot of work in the community. So please let us know how we can continue the outreach to the community after this conversation tonight.
And I guess we have our first caller. I'd like to have Anne.
Yeah,
come on the line.
Just a minute. Okay, so folks, please remember, this is your 33rd District Telephone Town Hall. It is live. It's happening right now. If you have a question, press star 3 on your keypad right now. And, yes, we are going with Anne, who has a question about the minimum wage. Anne?
I'm wondering if they think it is a good idea to raise it so much at a time or whether they want to raise it at all.
Thank you, Anne. I really appreciate your question. The minimum wage proposal to increase the minimum wage did not pass this legislative session. It was discussed, and I personally think that the minimum wage has one effect, and that is it increases the income of people working at low-wage jobs. That means that they are better able to take care of themselves and their families. And in my view, that's generally a very good thing. As you know, in our district, we represent the city of SeaTac, and they had a minimum wage, actually a living wage initiative in SeaTac last year to raise the minimum wage. And it did pass. It is not all totally implemented yet, but I'm hopeful that it will all be implemented and we'll see the benefit.
All right. Thank you very much. And let's see. Folks, please remember to press star 3 on your keypad right now. And if you're just joining us, this is your 33rd Legislative District Telephone Town Hall with Senator Karen Kaiser and Representatives Tina Orwell and Mia Gregerson. And we're going with Rob, who has a question about health care. Rob?
Yes, I was wondering how our representatives would respond to the fact that Obamacare Health Care Act is shutting down businesses and costing people jobs because businesses can't afford the health care costs.
Thank you, Rob. This is Karen again. And as you know, there have been a lot of accusations about what Obamacare has done. What we all need to remember that in our state, we now have 840,000 citizens getting health insurance and health care coverage when they didn't have it before. And that is a huge improvement. That will mean our communities will be healthier and our working people will be more productive. They'll be able to maintain their jobs. So I don't see that it's really been a detriment to small business yet. They have a SHOP program that they're creating that will make it actually even easier and lower cost for small businesses to access health insurance. And that will be available beginning in October of this year. People, small businesses can sign up for the SHOP program. And that, by small, it means 50 or fewer employees. So that's going to be a great boon as well to small businesses. And I think they'll see lower premiums, just like citizens have seen.
All right. Thank you very much. Let's see. We are about 12, 11 minutes into this call, so we're very happy to have you. Please press star 3 on your keypad right now if you have a question for your lawmakers in Olympia. And let's go with Rick, who has a question about legislation that impacts custody of children. Rick?
Hi, Congresswoman. I'm going to be recently involved in probably some current litigation, and I was wondering if there's any current or prior legislation that supports joint custody as the norm in the state of Washington.
Okay, thank you, Rick, for your question. This is Representative Tina Orwal. I do serve on judiciary, and we often do see legislation that is around parental rights and custody of children. We did have a bill introduced this session that was looking at the credit, the residential credit of which parent spends more time in the other household. So almost every year we have legislation that does impact in some way the custody of children. I do not know specifically, but what I would recommend on this issue is that you email or contact our office, because we would be glad to research in more detail information that you might need on this topic. But again, it is something that we do look at closely in the legislature, and it is impacted by statewide policy.
Thank you very much. And folks, if you have a question, please press star 3 on your keypad right now. And we're going to go with Nancy, who has a question about COLAs. Just a minute.
Hi. I was just wondering what was going on with the teacher COLAs. I know it's been a long time since they've had one, and I was just wondering where they were this year.
Yes, thank you, Nancy, for that question. And it's something I feel very strong about. I feel like the COLAs are long overdue. My understanding is it's been 6 years since teachers have received COLAs, the cost of living adjustment. And it was in the House budget. We were very proud to pass out a House budget that included that priority. Unfortunately, in the final budget negotiations with the Senate, that was removed. And so I am really disappointed. That definitely was one of my disappointments of the session. I'm going to turn to Karen Kaiser to see if she has additional.
Thank you, Tina. And I'm sorry to say, we could not get to agreement in the Senate on teacher COLAs, the cost of living adjustments. I totally support it. It's ridiculous to ask any working person, especially our public school teachers, to work year after year under more difficult circumstances every year for the same wage that they were making in 2008. It's been too long to have an adjustment. So I'll come back hopefully next year with a different situation in the Senate, and we'll get that COLA done.
And this
Thank
is
you very much. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Thank you. So this is Representative Mia Gregerson, and the voices from the community colleges teachers was also heard loud and clear that they have not received any type of wage increase over the past, I think, 3 years also. And so as we move into the next year's budget, we'll definitely be carrying those voices forward too. So the teachers have been heard.
Hi,
Thank
Pat.
You.
I understand.
We're going with, okay, just a minute. Please remember to press star 3 on your keypad if you are just joining us, or if you have a question for your lawmakers. And we're going with Pat, who has a question, I think, about the Postal Service. Pat?
Yeah, that's me.
Hi. Yeah, go ahead.
Hi. Is this Karen Kaiser?
Hi, yeah, Pat. Hi.
Well, I was an officer in the Letter Carriers Union back when you were with the State Labor Council.
Long
I met
time.
You way back then.
Yeah.
And I also met Mia when she knocked on my door here in SeaTac. Okay, I have a question about how come you guys do not counter the evil conservative lies that people just repeat over and over and over again. I have customers who repeat evil conservative lies to me, and then I just counter them, and I call them flat out. You are mutineers. You are seditionists trying to get me to believe in the lies of your mutiny. And you're a traitor to America because you do not love America as it is, and you do not love our president. Well,
Pat,
I never agreed with lots of my presidents, but they're my president and my commander-in-chief, and I obey.
Hey, Pat, could you put your comment into a question? Because I'm not sure how to respond. Do you want us to respond about the Postal Service?
Well, my background is the Postal Service. That is where I meet the people. I'm the only government person that they ever meet. And they feel free to tell me whatever in their heart. And I correct them when they are mistaken or wrong. But increasingly, they are way mistaken.
Okay, Pat, this is Lily, the moderator. Do you have a question for the lawmakers?
Why don't you do more to counter the propaganda from the evil conservatives?
Okay.
And this is Representative Orwell. And, Pat, I guess we haven't met. I hope to meet you. You know, I don't know if this gets to your question, but I do often know that often there's a kind of a low expectation around people that work in government, and I found quite the opposite. I think some of the hardest people I have met are actually people that are hardest working are people that I've met that work in government. One of the examples that I've worked on is foreclosure, and we had, you know, a very high rate of foreclosure in our state, and we really turned to our Department of Commerce and their staff to implement some procedures to make sure people had counseling and mediation. And, you know, I really saw government work highly effectively on behalf of the people of Washington State. So I don't know if that was getting at your question, but, you know, we have the teachers and we have, you know, the people that work at Department of Corrections, and we have a lot of people that are doing great things for our state on behalf of state government. And I'm certainly proud of the work they do.
And Mia, you work in local government.
I do, and I have worked on 4 different bills this session that have to do with efficiencies, whether it's high ed efficiency. That was House Bill 2613. I think it shows the desire for good government and the desire for multiple entities to come together and work on a bipartisan, multi-stakeholder format in order to help make the process more efficient. The other one was the firefighters. There was a firefighter bill to help, again, streamline the process in regards to some action that was taken back in 2007, and that was House Bill 2456. And the last one I'd like to say is the one that was just recently signed by Governor Inslee, and that's 2446, which allowed for property owners who had a refund to be able to go ahead and get the refund without the long, drawn-out process of having a snail-mailed form signed and sent back, which will save us all thousands of dollars. So some examples, I think, of good government.
Okay, thank you very much for those answers. And let's see, we're about 20 minutes into this one-hour call. If you have a question for your lawmakers, please press star 3 on your keypad right now. We're going to go with Herb, who has a question about the minimum wage.
Hello?
Herb? Yeah, hi. Please go ahead.
Hi, I called to see on how do you view the $15 an hour minimum wage, and are you in favor of expanding it from SeaTac throughout the county or the state?
Well, thanks, Herb, for that question. I personally think that we need to increase the minimum wage at the state level as well. I think it's great that local communities can take the initiative and do what is best for their local communities. But our state minimum wage could also use a bump up. Now, I think at the whole, you know, when you look at the whole state, you've got a lot of rural areas and a lot of small towns, and maybe the minimum wage doesn't go all the way up all at once. But we should have a higher minimum wage than we do now, which is just under $10 an hour. I don't know anybody who can work full-time for that wage and really have a decent life. And it seems to me in America that people who work full-time, work hard, and are productive really have a right to a decent life.
Thank you very much. Folks, if you have a question for your lawmakers, please press star 3 on your keypad right now. That's all you need to do, star 3. We're going with Jill, who has a question about health care. Jill?
Hi. I was wondering, since our Obama healthcare thing, if it was going to cover dental too, because our dental, our dental health is very important to our overall health, correct?
Correct. Thank you, Jill, for that question.
Absolutely. You're welcome.
Yes. The current health, of course, the current offerings on what's called the Washington Health Plan Finder, which, by the way, I'll just say again, has 840,000 citizens signed up. The current offerings include pediatric, children's dental, as part of the package. You can purchase adult dental as a separate package. But the trend, and this is coming to happen, I think, more and more, will be to embed dental, I think, into the health plan so that when you buy your health insurance, it will include dental. And it's as so much in healthcare. If you prevent problems in the first place, you will end up saving not only your health care, but a whole lot of money. And I know Mia knows a lot about dental. So why don't you speak to that as well, Mia?
Well, thank you, Senator. You know, the dental industry for me is a big part of my background, and we all know that it's really hard to get a good living wage job if you don't have healthy teeth or teeth that will allow you to be in customer service. As we know, our population is aging, and the dental entity industry really relies on making sure that that community is healthy and has access to service. So I think as we move forward, you're going to see a special oversight on the dental industry and making sure that they stay at the table along with the other health providers and looking for ways to streamline the system.
Thank you very much. We're going now with, well, first of all, a reminder, please press star 3 on your phone right now if you have a question. And we're going with Pam, who has a question about consumer protection. Pam?
Hi. I have a question about whether or not there's legislation in place, or if not, could there be legislation introduced to protect customers who prepay to companies in Washington for services or products, such that if those companies go out of business, that monies, those monies that the companies are holding onto must be returned to the customers who have prepaid but not had those services or products delivered. I'm speaking specifically about Pettit Oil, who recently filed for bankruptcy, holding on to over $1 million in thousands of customers who prepaid for heating oil that was not delivered. The company took the money, and they have closed their doors with no recourse, legal recourse, other than just wait in line in the bankruptcy hearing and probably never receive their money. And there are people who have paid over $1,000, prepaid over $1,000 for oil that was never delivered. One woman was who's 92, paid over $2,000, and she lost all of her money. In fact, her heating oil just went out. So anyway, the question is about legislation to protect customers when they prepay for product or services.
Well, thank you, Pam, for that question. This is Representative Tina Orwell, and that just sounds horrible. I just feel awful that would happen to anyone in our community, and that is a good reason why we need protection laws. We do a lot of legislation around this, but often the first place we go to is our Attorney General to see what kind of protections, if they can step in for companies that clearly have shown a trend of taking advantage of the people in Washington State. So probably, you know, I would probably want to work with you more closely, but I think our first thing would be to talk to the Attorney General and see if we have adequate laws and resources to, you know, help all these homeowners that were affected by this company going bankrupt. If not, we might have to come back next session and work on that. But our first thing would be to look at our current laws through our Attorney General and see how we could support the families that have been impacted. I did work on a consumer protection bill for veterans, and I know the AG can work actively on veterans cases as well, but obviously this has impacted a larger group than just veterans. So I definitely would want to work with you on this.
I'd like more information as well. I think any time that you have a kind of organized scheme to bilk people, we have to take it seriously. So if you have information, please get it to our offices. We'd really like to take a look at it.
Thank you very much. Okay, so we're about halfway through this call, and we have a lot of people on the line, so we were going to ask you to please be patient, and if you have a question, press star 3 on your keypad, and you will be we'll put your question on the queue. And we're going with Rose, who has a question about the Affordable Care Act and also another question about college tuition. Rose?
Guys, thank you so much for doing this. I did have a question about the Affordable Care Act and how many had signed up, but Karen, I heard you say a minute ago 840,000, so I'll skip that question then and go on to wondering what is happening in terms of trying to lower the college costs for the people here, as well as one quick one on the minimum wage. When we passed the minimum wage several years ago and increased it, I thought we indexed it so that it would always go up with the cost of living, and apparently that didn't work. Is there any way to the minimum wage, it will automatically go up, and these people won't have to slide back down in the future to a lower wage.
Well, thank you, Rose. I appreciate you calling in. Representative Tina Orwal, we all know you, and we appreciate your service to our community. The college tuition, it has not gone up. It's been kind of capped the last 2 years, and but it did have sharp increases before that. And so at this point, we did new investments last year to higher ed. We did not do a lot of investments this year, but the tuition has not gone up in our state for a two-year period. And, again, I have a lot of concern because I feel that that really has impacted a lot of families and students with enormous debt. And so that is something we need to continue to work on to make sure college is affordable. We do have the GET program, which has been very helpful for families, as well as, some students qualified for College Bound. And so I appreciate that. We're concerned about that issue. I'm also going to...
Yeah, I'll weigh in a little bit since we spent most of our committee days talking about other opportunities or options in regards to the tuition conversation, whether it's removing tax on books, whether it's listening to the different boards from the different universities talking to us about their programs. We also had a pay it forward scholarship conversation. So you'll see just a dozen or so bills that started the conversation around some of the different options. And as you know, back in 2011, there was the Joint Legislative Audit and Review Committee, also known as JLARC. And JLARC has come forward with a project update, and it's dated January 7th. And if you want to take a look at that, that should be on our website. That really does an overview from that 2011 legislation that asks for us to start taking a look at the funding related to tuition on a dashboard concept. So I hope that that will answer some of your questions, and please give us some feedback as we move into not only the interim phase but into next year's budget.
Thank you. And so I know I sound like a broken record, but hey, there's new people on the call. What can I do? Please press *3 on your keypad if you have a question for your lawmakers. And we're going with Bob, who has a question about the transportation package that didn't happen.
Yeah,
Bob?
I was wondering, do you believe it would do any good to have a special session to get a package done? And exactly what is this, sticking point to get it a package approved at this point?
Thank you, Bob. The sticking point, I'm sorry to tell you, is stuck in the Senate. On the Republican side of the aisle, they just did not want to vote for it, and so they wouldn't let it come to the floor. It did pass the House, so the House has done its job to put forward a good package for the future of our state. And by the way, it would have created something between 50 and 80,000 jobs. So I was prepared to vote for it, but the friends across the aisle who are in control of the state Senate refused to allow that package to come to the floor of the Senate. So we are stuck at the moment, but I think that there is going to be an effort on the local level in King County to at least address some of our issues.
Yeah, this is Mia Gregerson, and speaking to the transportation package, something that I've been working on also for several months is that the freight mobility, the completion of 509 and 167, we've done our work in the district. Your representatives, Representative Orwal, Senator Kaiser, all the elected officials, labor, unions, and business have all come together already, chambers, with that shared message, and now it's just about staying squeaky, like literally, and coming back again. Really holding the line that we need this transportation package and not to let the Senate hold it hostage. We need to really keep Washington rolling.
Thank you very much. Folks, *3 if you have a question. And we're going with Linda, who has a question about coal trains.
Hi. As I'm speaking, a train is decoupling or coupling about 100 feet away from my living room, and my whole house just shook. So my question from downtown Kent, bracketed by two separate sets of rails, is what can we do to prevent the coal train project from happening so that we have all of these mile-long trains going through the valleys up to Bellingham to the terminal to ship coal to China? I'm just so worried about this. I'm going to lose every penny that I have put into my house for my entire life. Life will not be worth living, let alone will I be able to get out of my community to go to work up at UW. What can we do?
Well, Linda, that is a tough question because these trains, they come across state lines. They aren't just under local jurisdiction. But you are absolutely right. The idea of having huge mile-long trains block our streets and our communities from our own transportation access as well as our quality of life is terribly troubling. So I do share your concern. I also have to say I'm concerned about oil trains. I think oil trains, the volatile oils that are coming by train, perhaps, from the Midwest, are not only an environmental and transportation concern, but a safety concern, because it seems to me those oil trains have a tendency to catch fire. So we are going to have to work in tandem with our adjacent communities, because we can't do this on our own. We're going to have to work with Seattle, and we're going to have to work with Tacoma. We're going to have to work with other parts of the urban built environment to see what we can do to ameliorate any degradation of our environment, of our public safety, and, of course, our transportation access with trains. Trains are a vital part of our economy, and moving goods and services by train is generally a very efficient use of our system. But I am extremely concerned about oil trains and coal trains in Kent. So I thank you for bringing that issue up.
Yeah, and I just want to echo what Karen said. This is Tina. Very concerned about this. And I think some of the next steps will be with Department of Ecology really looking at environmental impacts, which, of course, we live in one of the most beautiful states in the country, and we'd like to keep it beautiful, and we'd like to have a quality of life. So we'll be looking very closely at this.
And this is Mia. And one of the questions I've had over the session, too, is since I've replaced Representative, or now Council Member Dave Updegrove, is where do I stand on the environmental issues? And I very much stand for environmental issues that's going to protect our community, protect our environment, also to support business. And I think that if you look at how we work together, you'll see that we work very closely with the 34th District, and Representative Fitzgibbons has been very aggressive in taking over the environmental committee as chair. And so we'll certainly be watching very closely on what he does with that.
Thank you. We have about 20 minutes left of this great call. It's going really, really well. We have a lot of people on the call. We're very grateful for your questions. And, well, if you have one, please press star 3 on your keypad right now. We're going with Sandra, who has a question about drug addiction and mental health. Sandra?
Hi. First of all, I'd like to thank you so much for this forum, and I appreciate your commitment and involvement with your community. It's so refreshing after what we've experienced with the big government back on the East Coast. Yes, my question is, it seems like mental health for the mentally ill has diminished significantly, and also I believe that a drug addiction and mental health go hand in hand as far as the help and the aid for them, and I've had my own experience with my daughter who, through addiction, has now become mentally ill, and we've tried over and over to help her, and there just isn't any aid unless you have a lot of money to put them in a hospital, maybe out of state somewhere. And I just want to know if there's any legislation to improve the aid for addiction and mental health in the state of Washington. I know through experience with other parents and going to Al-Anon, it just seems to be a common problem. We try to help our kids, and there's just no help available because of the current laws.
Okay. Thank you, Sandra. I really appreciate that question, and I really appreciate you participating tonight. It's very important for us to get this feedback. My background's in mental health and drug and alcohol, and this session we had a lot of emphasis, and I think there's recognition in our state on several levels. One, we need to do more investments.
We have a lot of people in emergency rooms that do need inpatient care that haven't been able to receive it because we've been short on inpatient beds. So we actually have a $31 million commitment to expand capacity of inpatient beds as well as outpatient treatment. And, of course, that's for mental health and people with co-occurring disorders, which is very common. We also had some review of our current involuntary treatment laws. A lot of families testified that they have difficulty getting their family members detained. And we did some work a couple years ago to actually look at our involuntary law to make it easier for people to get detained. And that those changes will start in July, where someone who is potentially dangerous to themselves or others will have a different criteria that may make it easier for them to be detained. But again, I think having that outpatient is especially important. We did do new investments in outpatient mental health and chemical dependency care. The other thing that's going on in our state with the healthcare expansion is there's more efforts to try to integrate. You know, we have a mental health system and we have a chemical dependency system, and we're trying to see how do we integrate, because often people do have both, and we want them to get the care they need, a more holistic approach. And so, you know, Karen Kaiser has been very involved in this. I've been part of a lot of the dialogues of how we really improve care to people that need it.
And we did, in fact, Sandra, pass legislation this year that will be going into effect over the next 18 months to integrate chemical dependency and mental health services. It's important that we talk to each other, because when you have providers who are not aware of what is happening in a different setting, it's not the best outcome for the patient or the individual. So we think better integration will really improve outcomes. But you are right. It is a difficult, hard time for a parent with a child, especially with this challenge. So just be aware and stay in touch with us if you want to contact our offices directly, because we can sometimes help advocate for individuals who are running into roadblocks getting care, especially in these areas. You know, with the expansion of Obamacare, as we call it, a lot more people are accessing mental health services now because they are covered by Medicaid. And if your daughter is old enough, maybe that would apply for her as well.
Okay, thank you. Let's see. Please press star 3 on your keypad right now if you have a question. And we're going with Abby, who has a question about teacher evaluations.
Yeah, actually, I have. I'm just really curious about how you guys feel about the new adoption of the Common Core standards and also the Danielson framework that for the teacher evaluations.
Well, and thank you, Abby, for your question. I do serve on education. This is Representative Tina Orwell, and I know that teacher evaluation is something that started a couple years ago, and I really appreciate the work that has gone on. Highline District is actually one of the pilot sites, and I know there's been a lot of work between the principals and the teachers to develop that four-tier evaluation, and so I really appreciate the work that's gone on the evaluation system. The Common Core is interesting. You know, our state is moving towards Common Core, and I hear mixed things, and I think I want to look at it very carefully and speak to teachers. Part of it is to make sure we have a high level of academic rigor for students in the different areas like math and science and reading. But, you know, it's also just trying to make sure that when people are in the different areas of the state, they're getting, you know, kind of the common training tools and skills they need when students move. And so it is a change for our state. I think like any change, we're going to have to look at it carefully, and we're going to have to listen to teachers and parents to see how it's working in the classroom. Again, I've heard different things from different teachers. Some say it's very helpful. Others are worried about whether students are ready for the different levels in the different classrooms. So it is a movement in our country, and our state is moving in that direction.
Thank you very much. We're going with David now, who has a question about hospital mergers.
Hi, David? Thank you for taking my call. There seems to be a trend in Washington of religious organizations taking over hospitals or managing them. My concern is, what is being done to assure that if this does happen, that patients will still receive full services, women receiving abortions if needed, end-of-life care, such as death with dignity, service to gays and lesbians, and also that they provide their employees with benefits that are not based on their faith.
Thank you, David. This is Senator Kaiser, and you are correct that there is quite the trend of hospital mergers occurring in our state. It's coming to the point where we're getting to have just a very few hospitals dominate our market. And I'm concerned about that in just the sort of the market economics issue, because when you have basically one provider for a community that would be the only place you would go to a hospital, they get to set the price. And they also get to set the standards of care. So I think what we are really going to have to take a close look at is better oversight and regulation to make sure that all of our citizens can access all legal possibilities in their healthcare systems. And that means all healthcare systems, the ones that are in their communities. No one should have to travel a couple hundred miles to get their routine or regular health services. We did ask the Department of Health to review the current situation with hospitals, and they put together a process that's called Certificate of Need. It is underway. It is one of those challenging situations where the industry is appealing or challenging the proposed rules. So it's a struggle, and it will probably have to be resolved over the next couple of years by new legislation. I am very well aware of it. I am very concerned about it, and I thank you for bringing it up.
Thank you. We have 15 minutes left of this call, which is going truly great. We appreciate having you here with us, and if you have a question, you can still get it in. Press star 3. And we're going with Christina, who has a question about food stamps.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I am aware that there were food stamp cuts that affect many people in the state. The 33rd is probably more gently treated than some places, but only parts of it. And some of them are much worse off than we are. And that there is apparently a wrinkle in it that was allowed to be in, which involves reinstating people who have been dropped off food stamps if they get heat assistance as well. Some states have done it for as little as a buck to get it done, but they are said to be raising it to about 20. I was wondering if that's available in our state, and is there something we can do about that, because many parts of our state are colder than the 33rd, even still, and will be that for some time, and are also probably more in need of the food stamps.
Thank you, Christine. This is Karen Kaiser, and you are absolutely correct. There have been some rather deep cuts to the federal food stamp program. I will say that we did increase funding in the state budget for food support and for our food banks, but the food stamp cuts are difficult. And there is a provision that was put into that federal law, and I'm not a federal lawmaker, so I'm not totally conversant with it, but it basically says if you receive what's called LIHEAP, which is a heating assistance program, of at least $20 a month, you will become eligible for food stamps. And I believe the eligibility standard is set by the state, so I'm sure that we will be looking at that to adjust it to make sure that no one goes hungry. In our rich and beautiful, wonderful country, no family should ever go hungry.
Thank you. Yes. Folks, press star 3 if you have a question. And we're going now with Suzanne, who has a question about funding for children with disabilities.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call, and also thank you for this town hall meeting session. I have a one-year-old Down syndrome baby. He's beautiful and he's doing well, but he has a developmentally delayed, as you know. And my question is for state budget for developmentally challenged and delayed development funding, budget would increase in the future. That's my question.
Well, thank you, Suzanne, for your question. This is Representative Tina Orwell. And I know we do make a lot of investments for persons with disabilities, as we should. That is definitely a role of the state. And I do know that we did increase a waiver for families with kids with disabilities this session, whether it's the age. Your daughter's pretty young. It sounds like she's a toddler. There are some programs that I know do early intervention with children with autism. I do not know if your daughter qualifies, but that would be something one of our offices could help you look at because, again, they know that the earlier they get the supports and intervention, the more they integrate really well when they get to the school setting. So there are programs. We did do a waiver that is helping some families who didn't qualify before. And, again, if you want to contact my office, we'd be glad to work with you on it.
And I would say the same, Suzanne. We did pass the community first choice option, which will improve the problem we've had with families with DD kids having to sit on a waiting list. I think we had like 10,000 people on a waiting list. We're going to be able to address that waiting list with this new funding from the community first choice option that we did pass into law. So I think probably you won't have to sit on a waiting list, and hopefully we can get good services to you and your family.
Thank you. We have 10 minutes left of this call, so let's make the best of it. If you have a question, press star 3 now. We're going with John, and he has a question about state parks. John?
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. My question is about funding for state parks. If you see that there's any prospect of the state restoring some of the funding that's been severely cut in the last few years, and if not, will it be necessary for local governments to take over many of the parks or to just close them outright?
Oh, John, I sure hope we don't have to close them outright. We do have a real challenge on our hands with state parks, however. We created something called the Discover Pass, which is essentially a park pass for families to use our state parks. And unfortunately, the revenue from the Discover Pass hasn't quite matched the need for our parks. I know there have been other ideas, including advertising in parks or some more entertainment venue kinds of developments in parks, but they haven't really taken off. This is a challenge, and I'm looking for ideas and I'm looking for a solution. I don't have an easy answer for you. If you have a good suggestion, please contact my office. I'm very concerned about our state parks, including the one in our district, Saltwater State Park, which was my kid's backyard for several years. And it's just sad to go there now and see how few people are able to use that park because the Discover Pass is a barrier to people, especially low-income people. So we've got to figure this out and make full use of our state parks.
Okay, thanks. We're going now with Jeanette, who has a question about gas tax. Jeanette?
Thank you. I wondered if there has been an audit of the use of our gas taxes so we know that they're being spent on transportation.
Jeanette, this is Karen. Thank you for that question. You know, by our state law, it is required that gas taxes are spent on transportation and, in fact, is spent on roads. So the revenue stream is absolutely transparent and known. There is no way that gas taxes could be diverted for other non-transportation spending. So I want to assure everyone listening in that every penny of your gas tax is spent on transportation.
Thank you. Okay, this might be our last caller, depending on how quickly we get through it. And this is Keith. He has a question about the difference between medical and recreational marijuana. Keith?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call and listening to my incessant emails. My question is, in lieu of I-502, what protections for medical cannabis users will be in place to protect us from high prices and taxes and things like that.
Hi, Keith. It's Karen, and I have to just confess that our work on medical marijuana sort of having a full oversight of both recreational and medical marijuana ultimately failed this session. And it was a lot of work that was put into this legislation. I cannot tell you how many drafts of the legislation, how many hearings we sat through, how many sessions we voted on bills and got them going, but then they stalled somewhere else. It is a tough nut to crack. So the answer is we didn't get there this year. We're going to see what happens over the interim with medical marijuana in the dispensaries that we currently have being unchanged and with the new licensed recreational marijuana outlets and see what happens. And then I think we will have a more concrete interest and more concrete understanding of what to do to best address this issue and to assure that medical marijuana patients get fully served for their needs.
All right, thanks. Yeah, that was our last call. So that's all the time we have. Thank you for joining us this evening. I'll hand the phone over to your lawmakers for closing remarks in a second, but first I want you to know that if you did not get a chance to ask your question, you can leave a message for your 33rd District legislators at the conclusion of this call. And now here they are with closing remarks.
This is Representative Tina Orwell, and I just really want to say thank you for everyone that called in. Your feedback is so important to us and the work we do here in Olympia. I just want to encourage if you want to meet for coffee or send emails or phone calls, we'd love to hear more, and I would love to have a chance to listen to your concerns.
And this is Senator Kaiser, and I too want to thank you for joining and listening and being involved with your government, because it is your government. I want to mention a few things that we were able to pass this year. It wasn't all a disaster. I was really happy to see some very good legislation on juvenile justice. I was really pleased on the mental health legislation that was passed, on the community first choice legislation. I was able to get a state Alzheimer's plan in place, and hopefully the governor will sign it next week into law so we can plan for Alzheimer's patients and their families. I was also able to get $300,000 in the budget for the long-term care ombudsman, and that ombudsman works with our nursing homes to make sure that patients are getting have advocates and are getting care that they deserve. I was also very happy to get $1.5 million in our budget for tobacco prevention. And this is the first time we've been able to fund tobacco prevention in about 3 years. And finally, we were able to add autism screening for 18-month-old infants. It's very important for infants to be screened early in order to provide the best possible treatment and services for them. So we did get some good stuff done. I'm looking forward to the next session where we're going to take on education and really do a good job for teachers, for our classrooms, for our kids, and really come out, I think, on top with the McCleary decision hanging over our heads.
And, you know, to close this up, I just really want to say thank you to everybody who participated tonight. Your questions were great. I know that there's a lot of people out there in the queue that had more questions, and I think somebody complimented us on our ability to try to really reach out, and please just know that that's something that's very, very important to us. One of the first things that we did this session, I think, is something to be so proud to be part of is the DREAM Act and passing the DREAM Act. That's something that they've been working on since 2007. And so I think even though it feels like sometimes that government's at a standstill or we sit and nitpick things to death, but there's some big and bold things that are happening. And I think a lot of the bills that died this year are a way to start the conversation for next year, and that's the way I'd really like to see that. But again, your participation to me is so important, and we really hope you'll stay there and go through this journey with us.